All right, so we know it's been a while, but for all of our loyal listeners out there, all 20 of them, we're breaking out the August 9th edition of the Revolutionary Sports Show. And who else but Brian Duchesne
and Corey Sullivan?
That's right. We're right back at it, talking about the Mariners to start it off. The Mariners have been a little hot and cold lately. We've seen them go a hot streak. They've been 10 games over 500. Then they came back to earth, 3 games over 500. Now they're kind of climbing back up, fighting for that final wild card spot. But, you know, they're going to have to get things together. I think they've got great pitching, which is what their backbone is. But the question is their pitching playing way over their head? Or are their players playing way over their head right now? I think at some point, Fernando Rodney is going to come back to earth. Some of those other guys that have been out of the league are going to come back to earth. Chris Young, Chris Taylor, if that's even his name. I don't know. All these guys are just kind of coming out of nowhere and succeeding, but then they send down James Jones at AAA Tacoma. I don't know if I agree with that, optioning to AAA Tacoma when you got Brad Miller still on the roster, but I mean, hey, maybe that's just me. What do you think the Mariners need to do to make the playoffs? And do you think they even have a shot to make the playoffs, even though they are about a half game or a game out? Are they close to making the playoffs?
Well, seeing these guys come out of the All-Star break, they came out, were looking bad, went on a nice little losing streak. I think they lost 6 of 8, and then made that trade for Austin Jackson, which I think we could have got a little bit more or somebody younger and better than Austin Jackson. But it did fill the leadoff spot that we needed. I've been an advocate of the Mariners getting a legitimate leadoff guy. Austin Jackson can definitely be that guy, but we also need something in the middle of the lineup. We finally, I think, gave up on the Justin Smoke project. Thank the Lord, because that has been going on way too long. But Kendrys Morales, we traded for him. He hasn't done much while he's been here. Zunino's been great to some extent, 18 home runs, but he's only hitting in the low 200s. I think he was at 211 the last time I checked, and we just can't have that as our cleanup hitter. With Cano playing well, Ackley playing way above his head right now, finally reaching his potential, hopefully. Hopefully he can keep up some production close to that. We'll need that if we are going to make a playoff push, but I think we can. I think we still have Taiwan coming back. I like our starters. Felix, obviously, probably the best pitcher in the game outside of Clayton Kershaw. Taiwan, I like what we have with Elias. And Young, he's good. I think, you know, him being the five-man after Paxton, that we have what it takes. If Rodney can maintain what he's got going on, 31 saves or something crazy like that, he's been balling. And all of our moves that Jack Z's been making have been working out. So if we can just get DeNorfia out of right field, I think we have a real good chance to making a playoff push. And, you know, the ball's in our court. I believe that with the win tonight, it would tie us for the wild card lead, and it's ours to lose. And I think that, you know, with the 12s behind us, I think that we can pull it out if a pennant race comes. And in September, we're fighting for one of those playoff spots, because I don't think we're catching Oakland.
But the question is, if the Mariners do turn out to be really good, to make the playoffs, are a bunch of 10th man flags going to be flying around, or what's that going to be about?
I'm excited. I think Seattle will have a fan base for something out there. You know, the Seahawks have had the 12s for a long time, so if the Mariners can pull it out and have somebody, the Sounders have, you know, a good crowd, I think that we can have something special here in Seattle. We have good fans, and, you know, with fans like that in a baseball environment, it's, you know, exactly what we need to make it to the next level.
All right, now switching over, staying with baseball, but switching over to a different topic. Al Albuquerque got the win last night. In every show, we got to throw in Big Al. Even when he's not on Detroit anymore, even though I want him to stay on there forever until he retires. Corey, how sick was that win by Al Albuquerque the other night?
I love Al Albuquerque. And if you guys listen to this show, you know that Al Albuquerque is probably our favorite player ever. So, Jack Z, if you're listening, we need to figure out how we can get Big Al to Seattle as soon as possible and keep him here forever.
And if you do that, you'll have 2 new season ticket subscriptions. You know that.
But Big Al is amazing. He's the only pitcher I know that can have 3 strikeouts in an inning and only pitch, you know, 2/3 of an inning. He's just that type of guy. With his wild command, that's actually getting a lot better. You know, he's turned it around a lot this year. It's only his fourth year in the league. His first 3 years, he really struggled with command. This year, his walks per nine has gone down tremendously, but he's allowing more hits. But that's just him getting better, him, you know, learning how to hit the strike zone. And although hitters are hitting him, it's just an amount of time till he's able to fool hitters with his location, as Felix does, as, you know, the top guys in the game, where, you know, if he's off his game, hitters just won't swing, and he'll walk, you know, three, four guys. But now it's, you know, if he's looking for that out pitch, if he has two strikes on somebody, he can pitch it outside corner. He can pitch it low and away, you know, get it by the catcher or whatever he has to do to make sure that he gets the out.
And also, let me bring this fact up. Last year, when he got optioned to AAA Toledo, we saw him strike out four guys in one inning because of his lack of control. Struck out a dude on a wild pitch that ended up reaching first base. And then he struck out three more after that. So, I mean, if that's not incentive enough to bring the guy in onto your team, I don't know what else to do. I mean, that's a pretty good resume if you ask me. But nobody else apparently wants him except Detroit, which I'm okay with, because I'll take Al on my team any day.
Being a Detroit fan, being a Detroit guy, what is it like to have the best rotation in baseball, and how do you feel about the David Price addition?
Right when they got David Price, we saw Anibal Sanchez come up a little tight last night, so they gave up Drew Smyly, which was their number five. So if one of their pitchers goes down, I don't really know what they're going to do to fill in that fifth rotation spot. But now that they have two or three number one pitchers on their team, you got Scherzer, you got Verlander, and you have David Price, you got a lot of depth, so you can go three or four games. You could even go to a four-person rotation in the playoffs, which a lot of teams do. So I think they'll go Porcello, Scherzer, Sanchez, Price, and then Verlander in there too. But Porcello usually gets optioned to the bullpen. This year, though, he's doing well. He's pitching close to a 3 ERA, struck out, I believe, 11 the other night, killing it. So I think in the playoffs, they're going to have tremendous depth, but they don't have Drew Smyly anymore, which is a key left-handed pitcher. But they did give him up to get David Price, which I'm okay with that, because David Price, obviously the better choice than Drew Smyly. But now they've got good pitching. Verlander's starting to come around after his nightmare 4.84 ERA. He's coming down, and I think he's finally learning how to get back in stride, and that's what Detroit needs to do with this new all-star relieving and starting cast, with Al Albuquerque being the all-star that I'm talking about in the bullpen.
You still believe in Verlander?
I do. I think he's good. And Al Albuquerque is not actually an all-star, if people are listening. But
not yet. He's not yet.
But Verlander, I think, was struggling this year. He just didn't have his stuff and his control, and now he's finding it again. He can't go the nine innings no earned that he used to be able to, but if he can go seven, give up two earned runs, call it a good day, and, you know, that's all they really need out of him at this point, especially with Rajay Davis power swinging in their lineup. But they had to give up Austin Jackson, which is a big loss. Now they have a bunch of rookies and new call-ups playing their outfield, so we'll see how those guys can kind of take the backbone. We saw Castellanos and Suarez hit those home runs last night, so they're getting their young guys to step up and win games, but we'll see how their offense picks up and backs up their pitching coming up.
How did you like that Nick Franklin, Austin Jackson trade?
Well, at first somebody told me that Nick Franklin went to Detroit straight up for Drew Smyly. I was a little mad about it, because I didn't want Nick Franklin on Detroit's roster at all. And then I looked and saw what it was, and I was happy about it, because it's a good deal for the Mariners to get rid of Nick Franklin, because he's definitely a non-elite prospect. He definitely proved that in Seattle. Nobody wanted him. And then all of a sudden he just lands with Tampa Bay. So, I mean, he can definitely stay over there for all I'm concerned, and never set foot in Seattle or Detroit ever again, unless he's playing here so he can strike out five times. But I think that was a good deal for everybody but Tampa Bay in that trade.
Yeah. I can't imagine why Tampa Bay would want to make that move. You know, you give up one of the best young pitchers in baseball to get, you know, Nick Franklin, really, and, you know, a couple other prospects that, you know, could potentially one day be good, but no way on the same plane as David Price. And I don't understand why they didn't get him or Austin Jackson. I feel like the Mariners made out the best out of everyone.
Yeah, I think the reason that Tampa Bay did that is they're probably just dumping payroll and they couldn't afford David Price anymore. They didn't know how they were going to keep all these guys, so they agreed to take Nick Franklin and Drew Smyly, which Drew Smyly, I believe, is under $1 million a year. Nick Franklin, you can pay him like the minimum, so I don't even think it's a bad thing to take those guys. It's just don't expect to win with them on your team, but you're going to be able to take that money and spend it somewhere next year.
Speaking of taking money and spending it somewhere next year, let's talk about the NFL season. We got the preseason game ones kicked off this week. The Rams played last night. Michael Sam made his debut. One tackle, one hit on the quarterback. How do you feel about his performance?
Well, everybody's been all hype about Michael Sam and how he's the first gay football player. It shouldn't matter that the guy's gay. I think you should go out and prove that you're a football player regardless. So Michael Sam, a lot of people were excited to see how his first preseason game was going. But the thing you got to keep in mind with preseason is you're going against the second and third string defense. You're going against the second and third string offense. So you don't even know how good the guys are that he's going up against. So that one tackle could have been on a fourth string running back that hasn't learned the system yet. But I mean, not saying that Michael Sam did do that, but also when you looked at the highlights, he overran the quarterback, tried to block him, and you know, they did a good job. He just ran straight through instead of cutting back and trying to make some kind of a move, like a spin move or something like that to try to get to the quarterback. He just kept running. So I mean, it's, you can say what you want about Michael Sam. There's all this stuff out there about how everyone's proud of him for being the first gay football player, but I think regardless of whether you're gay, straight, whatever, you still got to go out and play the game. You still got to prove to people that you can play the game instead of making such a big media fuss about it and going out in the preseason running right past the quarterback.
You see, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I hope that he gets cut as soon as possible. I did not like at all what he did to get drafted. I feel like he uses the gay persona as a way to build his reputation to get drafted highly. And, you know, to be honest, talking to the Rams front office right now, I'm a little upset that you even gave him a chance. You know, didn't even make him earn his keep as an undrafted free agent. I feel like he would have had more to prove then than to be, you know, I got drafted in the seventh round, like. And then he got like a reality TV show and this, that, and the other. But he has done nothing. He's proved nothing. He's going to be behind, if he even makes the team, he's going to be behind Robert Quinn, who is a baller, and Chris Long, who is also a baller. So I don't know when this guy will ever see the field for the Rams. Hopefully he gets cut. Hopefully he can prove himself from, you know, probably not going to be the Texans either, because they got some ballers at the defensive end position, but maybe the Jags will pick him up. You know, maybe the 49ers will give him a chance, somebody along those lines, because he's just not good. One tackle, one quarterback hit. I know it's preseason. I know he doesn't get a lot of playing time. It's his first, you know, time being in an NFL environment, and he's got a lot of pressure on him, but he put that pressure on himself. He's the one that wanted this, and he didn't come to play. Although it's only one game, we'll see what he's got. But I wasn't impressed, you know, to say the least. He did nothing that was overly impressive. There was no plays that was like, wow, you know, shows no signs of greatness, and that's why he was picked in the seventh round.
So it shows that you can't blow up the media and then expect to just coast right through the NFL. It doesn't really work like that. So although he has gotten press for who he is, it's fine coming out and being who he is, but, you know, I think the football feels a little bit different and a little more harsh than the media is sometimes, so. Watch out, Michael Sam. Could be a rough world on the field.
Sticking with the division, we had the Seahawks play. A rough loss to, I don't think they're a rival to us, but, you know, apparently we're their rival, the Denver Broncos. They gave us a loss. How do you feel about our team overall and how they played on, was it Wednesday?
Thursday. Well, what I was really curious about was how Terrell Pryor was going to come out and play. You saw him struggle with Oakland, and he was kind of bounced around a little bit, and nobody was really sure about what they had with Terrell Pryor. I was a little shocked that they picked him up in the first place. I think B.J. Daniels is a good third string, but Terrell Pryor comes in, and when he was out there, I thought he looked better than Tavares Jackson would, so I think he could easily take the second string role, or if they want to make him a receiver, He showed that he can get those legs moving and kind of make things happen and be a playmaker. And he's better than Josh Portis was a couple years ago. Josh Portis was all run, no pass. And although Terrell Pryor's delivery looks a little bit weird, and he did throw that pick at the end, which I don't think was his fault. It was off Lockett's hands.
Yeah.
I think Pryor looked pretty good for a second string or third string quarterback, and I think it was a good pickup after watching him. And I think Richardson looked pretty good with the couple plays that he was out there for, and you know, made, I think, one catch that I saw. And I mean, it wasn't really a highlight-filled game except for the lightning storm that went through there. That was pretty sweet. But other than that, you know, preseason week one, they're just kind of out there to see who's going to get cut and who's going to make the team. And also getting ejected isn't the way to make the football team.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously not that important. You got ejected. And if you're trying to make the team, you don't do that kind of stuff. And it's not going to be looked at real well by Big Pete. And maybe Tom Cable taught him a lesson after the game.
You know, I thought the game, first Cam Chancellor didn't play, Beast Mode didn't play, and our offensive line obviously didn't play. And outside of that, I was really unimpressed with our team. I was really disappointed in Britt, our second-round pick. I saw him getting blown up on the line endlessly. Russ was running for his life, trying to make plays. I'm also frustrated at Russ, although he's a great quarterback, always tries to make the best out of any play, preseason, regular season, Super Bowl, regardless. He took a bunch of unnecessary hits, and that's exactly what we don't need from our star quarterback. You know, up-and-coming guy, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's tough, you know, no doubt in that. He's a tough guy, but I just don't want him to take unnecessary hits from guys that are trying to prove themselves, guys that are trying to make it to the league, make it to the next level, when we have Terrell Pryor and we have T-Jack back there. And with that being said, I would much rather have T-Jack than Terrell Pryor. Terrell Pryor is one of my favorite quarterbacks. I loved Terrell Pryor when he was at Ohio State. He was, you know, in college, one of my favorite quarterbacks. But I like T-Jack. T-Jack knows the system. T-Jack has played for us for many years. He can get the job done on a game-to-game basis if, you know, heaven forbid, if Russ was to get a concussion or something like that. I would feel much more comfortable in a close game, in a playoff race with T-Jack coming in to take over for Russ than I would be for Terrell Pryor to, you know, take the reins from Russ right away. Although Terrell Pryor, he would add a part of the game that T-Jack can't do. Nobody has legs like Terrell Pryor does, that's for sure. He can run it, but his accuracy is just, you know. Although I did think it was it's Lockett's fault that, you know, he had a hand on it at the end of the game. Terrell should have put it somewhere where the defender was not even close to it. And, you know, if he threw it too hard for Lockett, then that's just something that they got to work on. But I just feel more comfortable with T-Jack. Russ, obviously, I just hope he never leaves the game. But outside of that, I was unimpressed with the Seahawks up and down, except for our middle linebacker, Brock Coyle. He got trucked a couple times, but he made a couple tackles. He looked like a solid guy. We might be able to use him on, like, special teams or something. Obviously, Bobby Wagner's in no position, as well as KJ and everybody else on our linebacking core, of losing their starting job. But, you know, he's a guy that brought a lot of energy to the game and maybe could fill in once upon a time in the middle of the game somewhere. But outside of that, I don't think anybody is really making a big impact on this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to tell, too, with preseason. I don't know. Wins and losses don't mean that much in preseason. It's just kind of getting back on the field after that long off season since February and kind of just getting the fans riled up a little bit. But nothing else really exciting going on in the preseason except just finding out who's going to make the team. So week one, we'll see for sure. And week three of the preseason is always the best to watch because that's where the starters start playing more. And it's more like a real game. And the first half will be like a real game. So preseason week three, I'll be looking for it and seeing how they look. But as of right now, not really a huge deal.
Also in the preseason right now, we got the NBA. Big trade going on, potentially. We got Kevin Love going to Cleveland for Anthony Bennett. Andrew Wiggins, apparently the next greatest thing, we'll see. And a protected first-round pick. What do you think about this?
You know, I think I thought it was a great move when Minnesota traded OJ Mayo for Kevin Love back in the day. I actually thought OJ Mayo was going to be a really good player, and then I looked at Kevin Love's stats, and I was a fan of that trade a few months after it happened. Yeah. But, you know, now you look at it, and now Minnesota's giving him up for a potential player who is supposed to be one of the best, but you don't know. Coming out of college, you don't really know what you have. He's all hype, and I don't know what he's going to be able to do, if he's going to be able to back that hype up, or if he's going to be a Darko Milicic. You never know. So I think that's one thing to watch, whether Minnesota's going to be able to step up and play without Kevin Love, because he's a big backbone of their team. They just gave up their whole base to get Andrew Wiggins. So the question is, can Andrew Wiggins fit into Minnesota's system? And I think the Cavs are just loaded at this point with Kyrie and Kevin Love. And who's that one guy from the Heat they just got? LeBron? LeBron something?
Yeah, they're looking real good. Can't deny that. The Cavs, top to bottom, Waiters, Kyrie, Varejao, Tristan Thompson will come off the bench, which I think is, I don't know. For a player like that, I like what Tristan Thompson has to offer. Obviously, before I get started, he's nothing even close to compared to Kevin Love. So I'll say that to start with. Kevin Love is an amazing basketball player. May potentially be a Hall of Famer if he can win a couple championships with the Cavs. But with that being said, I don't think that this Cavs team is as good as the Heat. You know, I like what D-Wade has to offer. D-Wade, in my eyes, is definitely a Hall of Famer. Chris Bosh, two-time NBA champion, nine-time All-Star, lefty, seven-footer. That's not something that you can teach. That's something that a lot of Heat, a lot of LeBron fans take for granted. And, you know, I like Kevin Love. I like Kyrie. They just don't have any playoff experience. And, you know, just like the Rockets learned this year, playoff experience means a lot. The Thunder are still learning it. And LeBron can only take you so far. I feel like this is going to be LeBron 2.0 in Cleveland. He has to carry the team the whole way, and then, you know, he's the only one performing come playoff time. Can this Cavs team beat the Spurs? No way. No chance this team beats the Spurs. The Spurs are just too solid. They've been together too long. The Cavs easily have the most talented team, way more talented than any team in the league right
except
now.
Except the Pistons.
But they just don't play the team ball. They don't have what it takes to be that championship caliber yet. And I think Wiggins is a lot better than Dion Waiters. This trade is not getting done without Wiggins, first of all. But, you know, then flip side, I don't know what the Timberwolves are thinking. They just drafted Zach LaVine.
Adam's brother?
What is he going to do? Now they got Wiggins. Yes, I would rather have Wiggins. Wiggins, Rubio, hopefully Anthony Bennett turns it around, Pekovic. But now they have two rookies playing the same position. They got to make a trade. They got to get rid of him. He's supposed to be the most prolific, high-flying rookie in the game, maybe player in the game in general, Zach. And so, hey, feel free to come to the Lakers. We need a bunch of people. I feel like we're just throwing our name in a hat and picking whoever is left in the league.
Can they draft Kobe Bryant a healthy Achilles tendon?
I think Kobe will be great. I know Kobe's going to be great. Kobe's going to be Kobe. We're not worried about that. But right. Timberwolves, Cavs, I'm not really sure why the Timberwolves were so eager to get rid of Kevin Love. I'm sure they could have got plenty more than Wiggins and Anthony Bennett. You know, I don't understand that thought process. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just an analyst sometimes.
Part-time.
But I think Kevin Love will be good. I think the Cavs probably be one of the best teams in the East because the East is weak. But when they come against those Western teams that, you know, play rougher team ball, I don't think that Varejao and those guys will be able to hang. But this, you know, for a positive thing, because I do say a lot of negative things about LeBron, for a positive thing, I think his big men are a lot better. And, you know, Kyrie will be the best point guard he's ever played with. So, you know, no excuses. Although Waiters, I'm not I don't know how Waiters is going to do without taking a lot of shots. You know, all those guys, every single player on that team now requires a lot of shots. Out of Varejao, you know, LeBron requires a lot of shots, a lot of shots. Kyrie takes a lot of shots. Waiters, he's a shooting guard, you mean, that's in the name. As well as, who do they got at the, and Love. You know, Love is, what, 25 and 12 guy. How are you going to get that if you're not getting those type of shots?
So, yeah, he's going to put up some trip dubs, you know, double-doubles.
Everybody's going to have to figure out their role quickly if this team is going to be successful, because at the end of the day, that's what a great team is. Everybody has to believe that role, believe that coach. They got a new coach. They got new players. Who knows what the Cavs are going to do?
Yeah, you never know, but I like the Cavs definitely as a playoff team. I picked the Pistons as a playoff team last year, so what the hell do I know at this point? But you know, now that Detroit's got Stan Van Gundy, you got the Seattle Supers. Oh, never mind.
Too soon?
Got the Oklahoma City Thunder. We're not going to talk about them. But I don't know. It should be an interesting season with D-Wade and Chris Bosh over in Miami. I thought Bosh was going to take the Houston deal for sure, but stayed in Miami to stay with D-Wade. And question is, do these guys still have it without LeBron to work together and put together a game plan and listen to Eric Spoelstra try to coach him up?
I think that they do. I really like Bosh. Bosh is one of my favorite players in the league. One of the most underrated players. The Heat win none of those championships without Bosh. As well as everybody. I mean, everybody played a big role. But Bosh, he took a lot of flack for everything that happened in Miami. And I think Miami fans will learn this year, if D-Wade is unable to stay healthy, how good Bosh can really be. Toronto fans know it better than anybody. He's their all-time leading scorer. It's just, he's so good. And it's just something that you can't find. You don't find seven-footers that can shoot, play defense, rebound, and do it all like Bosh can. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge and Bosh are once every 5-10 years, if that. And I just don't think that they're appreciated like that. So, and he's a lefty to on top of all that. He's
slinging it.
And he can shoot. I mean, I know I just said that, but that's the big thing here is you don't find big guys that can shoot that often that are good outside of that. I mean, you know, Dirk Nowitzki is not a great defender, but he's coming down and he's going to score, dirty. Guaranteed. He's dirty. Dirty, real dirty. But, you know, that's just how I feel about Bosh and the Heat. I think they'll be fine if D-Wade can stay healthy. They got a dude from UConn, Shabazz Napier.
There we go.
He'll be good. I don't think he'll be a superstar, all-star stud or anything, but I like him better than I like Chalmers. I don't even like Norris Cole at all. I think he's garbage. But everyone will expose themselves this year. I think Ray Allen's gone. I think he's going to be, you know, one of those late Cavs joiners. Everybody riding LeBron's coattails. Just trying to get one more championship.
Johnny Manziel. That's the topic we'll stick on right now. Do you think Johnny Manziel will be the starter by, let's roll the dice here, week 4 of the NFL season? Will Johnny Manziel be starting?
To be completely honest, I'm probably Johnny Manziel's biggest supporter. So I think by week 1, he'll be starting, to be honest with you. Brian Hoyer, I think it's a joke that he's even being considered. I mean, I know you can't just hand people the starting job just because. But on the other hand, you don't draft a quarterback in the first round because you plan on keeping the quarterback you already have. You know what I'm saying? You don't believe Hoyer is your man and then trade up to draft a quarterback in the first round. That doesn't happen. You know, they took Gilbert, and that's when I thought it was done for my boy Manziel, who sure went number 1 Texans. But I like him having a chip on his shoulder. In Cleveland, he doesn't have very many things on his side. My guy Josh Gordon, who is an absolute idiot, hopefully is not out for the year. And him and Manziel, if he can do it, I think that they'll be good. I like everything that the Browns got going on right now. Cleveland is a great place to be an athlete. Right now, LeBron has brought a lot back to that city, although Wiggins is gone. It's promising. It's a promising place to be. If Manziel can reach his potential, which I think he will, I think he'll start out the year. He played well today. We'll see what he can do. But that's how I feel about Manziel. I really like Money Manziel. And I think week one will be when we see him. How about you? What do you think about my boy Johnny? Johnny Football.
I'm one of those critics of Johnny Manziel. So although you're one of his supporters, I don't know how much I like Johnny Manziel. I think he's a little cocky for what he is. And he's one of those guys that think, not to take a shot at UW here, but he's kind of like a Jake Locker type player that's going to roll out. I said Jake Locker was injury prone when he made the NFL because he gets out and runs and he's not really ready to take the hit. But at the same time, I think Johnny Manziel's that way. So I think he's going to get out, he's going to run, he's going to take a big hit and be out a few weeks and need to learn his lesson and kind of learn to alter his game a little bit. And I think that's what is a problem with Cleveland. They haven't had a good history of drafting quarterbacks. Unless you consider Brandon Whedon a good pickup, of course. So,
or Colt McCoy.
Yeah, I mean, that worked well. Colt McCoy, too. I mean, you can keep the list rolling for ages if you want to go that far, but...
Brian Rubisky?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. The Browns are just not known for drafting good quarterbacks, and I think Johnny Manziel is set up to kind of fit that persona again. Cleveland drafts another bust quarterback, but, I mean, I personally would rather have Johnny Manziel than, say, Geno Smith, last year's first-round pick for the Jets. But at the same time, I don't know. I'm not a huge Johnny Manziel fan. I think he needs to get it together and prove himself. As far as Brian Hoyer goes, he does have experience sitting behind Tom Brady, so he does kind of know what it's like to kind of ride the bench a little bit and learn behind a great. But at the same time, Matt Flynn sat behind Aaron Rodgers, and you know, he's bounced around about four or five teams too. So, I mean, Brian Hoyer's got a lot to prove. I think Johnny Manziel's got a lot to prove. I think Cleveland in general has a lot to prove as the Cleveland Browns. So I think Johnny Manziel, watch out for him to come out and try to prove himself in practice and the preseason to show that he's better than Brian Hoyer. Try to get that starting job and come out. I say he is starting eventually by at least week five, but same time, I'm not a huge Johnny Manziel fan. I think, especially with Cleveland's line, I think he's going to get pounded in his first year.
I agree with you. I think that he will get blasted early and often. Teams will be going at him because of his cocky persona. Personally, I'm a fan of it. You know, I like those guys like Cam Newton, the quarterbacks that think they're the best, because you have to be. If you're going to be successful at that level, Colin Kaepernick, I love that about them, that they're the ones that it's, you know, it's me. Put the spotlight on me. You know, let my teammates handle what they want to do outside, into whatever they got to do to get their mind right for the game. I'll take all the pressure, and we'll see if I can take it. We'll see if I can come to the table, because if I bring the noise, if I bring it every single day, every single game, and I'm performing, my teammates are going to eat that up, and they're going to be performing with me. And I think Johnny Manziel is that type of guy, the type of guy that'll get his players riled up, that they'll come play for him. And yeah, he's young. Yeah, he's cocky. Yeah, there's some things he can work on. But that's the type of guy that I want leading my locker room, a guy that knows he is the man, knows he can do it, and then brings everybody else with him.
That makes sense. Okay, so then the big question is, this could be a tough question, who has a better shot at making an NFL roster? One, Phil Bates, wide receiver for Seattle, or two, Michael Sam, defensive end for the St. Louis Rams?
To be honest, Phil Bates has a lot easier road than Michael Sam, first of all. Phil Bates, you know, he fell into a positive position. The Seahawks, Sidney Rice just retired, opens up a starting spot, and, you know, we need more receivers. Ricardo Lockett had a crucial drop in that game one. Although I don't think we're going to cut Lockett. Lockett is a great special teams guy. He's been on special teams for us for quite some time now, knows the system. I think Phil Bates at least will be a practice squad player. Although I do think he'll make the team, I don't think he'll be a practice squad player. But, you know, the lowest that he can go for the Seahawks is practice squad. The lowest Michael Sam, probably the highest Michael Sam can go for the Rams is getting cut. I don't think that he can play on that roster. And it's not because of it is because of his skill level, but it's not because of him being gay or him being, you know, whatever. It's because he's not good enough. The players on the Rams line are really good. All first round picks, all really good. Chris Long, Robert Quinn, they're not coming out of the game. Those are guys that are staples on that team for a long, long, long time. And so nothing against Michael Sam. He's just not as good as those particular players. Can he play on an NFL roster? Probably. A team will probably pick him up just so they can sell jerseys or whatever. But is he a J.J. Watt? Is he a Jadeveon Clowney? Not even close. You know, no Michael Bennett. He's not going to get big money like that. He's not going to be a playmaker like that. But can he be a solid guy to come in, you know, maybe be a specialist like a third down rusher or something along that line? I'm sure he can make a team somewhere. Oakland, you know, like I said, the 49ers are probably looking for some skill players.
But at the same time, could he make a practice squad roster for the Rams?
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe. I'm not sure. Actually, to be honest, I'm not sure. They got Eugene Sims, who I've never heard of in my entire life. But somehow he's starting over. He's the second string right behind Robert Quinn. And if some guy that I've never even heard of in my life, and you're third string, I don't know what to tell you. If he doesn't outplay him, which one tackle and one quarterback hit is not going to do, although it is one game, I'll give you that, only one game. So, you know, we got a couple more. But to be honest, I think he'll be on the team just so the Rams don't get any negative publicity that he'll be on the team until they do final roster cuts. And then as final roster cuts come along, he'll be one of the last guys to get cut.
All right. I think that just about wraps it up for today. If you have any questions for us, hit us up on Twitter at Rev Sports Show. The hosts, Corey Sullivan, Brian Duchesne. You can tweet at us also at BK Duchesne.
At Corey_Sullivan.
And other than that, you know, I hope you guys like this newest version of the Revolutionary Sports Show. We know it's been a while, but we had to come back. And as they say, we out you.
We had to do it to them.
So keep it tuned. We'll have another one pumping out soon, but keep it locked right here on the Revolutionary Sports Show for all your Seahawks, Mariners, NHL.
Tigers. Detroit Tigers.
MLB.
LeBron.
And NB. What is that league called now that the Sonics are gone? And NB.
The NBDL. Or
The National Basketball Disabled List. NBA coverage, even though we are in Seattle. Keep it locked. Revolutionary Sports Show.
Bring back our Sonics.
We're out.
Bye.
You can find us where the party at. This is how we roll.